On the show today, the U.S. attacks Iran-backed facilities in Syria.
The U.S. military has conducted what they refer to as self-defense strikes on two facilities in eastern Syria that they say are used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and Iranian-backed proxy groups.
Plus, President Joe Biden is facing domestic pressures over foreign conflicts.
Nine members of Congress, mostly from the progressive wing of Biden's Democratic Party, voted against a resolution backing Israel and condemning Hamas.
And later, what happens to Russian soldiers in Ukraine who don't follow orders? Plus, King Charles is headed to Kenya. Today is Friday, October 27th. And this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. A developing story out of the Pentagon. Late Thursday night in Washington, the Secretary of Defense announced that the U.S. has attacked facilities in Syria used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and affiliated groups. For more, I'm joined by VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Babb.
That's right. The U.S. military has conducted what they refer to as self-defense strikes on two facilities in eastern Syria that they say are used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and Iranian-backed proxy groups. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin says the precision strikes are a response to this series of strikes that have been going on against U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria over the past few days. Our latest tally that I have from multiple officials is that at least 17 attacks have occurred in Iraq and Syria over the last few days. Because of this, because of all of these injuries and this death, the secretary said that there is safety of U.S. personnel is a priority. And he said that the president directed these strikes that happened tonight because he said that he wanted to make clear that the United States will not tolerate such attacks and will defend itself, its personnel, and its interests.
And is the Pentagon saying that the previous strikes on American forces in the region originated from these facilities in Syria?
They have not gotten into that level of specificity at this point, but we do know that the Pentagon has reiterated several times, and the White House has reiterated several times, that these attacks over the last few days were conducted by Iranian-backed proxies, proxies that are funded by Iran, and ultimately they hold Iran accountable for these actions. But they said this is not in their minds, this is not intended to expand the war. It was narrowly tailored to defend U.S. personnel in Iraq and Syria, the Pentagon says, and it has nothing to do with the ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas, with the defense secretary saying tonight that they do not want this to constitute a shift in the U.S. approach to the Israel-Hamas conflict. They urge all state and non-state actors in the region not to escalate this into a broader regional war.
Do we know what the United States used to make these attacks? Was it troops? Was it planes? How did it happen?
This was an aerial assault. I am unclear if it was manned or unmanned aircraft at this time, but it was definitely airstrikes that were conducted. And I have been told by officials that these strikes had been planned for several days, that they were waiting for the right timing, the right conditions to strike back against these proxy groups.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Carla, thanks for your reporting on this breaking story.
You're welcome.
As we've seen with Carla, the military situation in the Middle East is growing more tense. The same is true with the political situation in Washington. Joe Biden campaigned on ending forever wars. He now faces the new conflict in Gaza amid the ongoing Ukraine war and rising Sino-U.S. tensions over Taiwan. How he handles these challenges amid domestic pressures, including dissent from progressives within his own party and a new Speaker of the House with a track record of opposing aid for Ukraine, may affect his re-election bid in 2024. VOA's White House bureau chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has the story.
Amid mounting Palestinian deaths from Israeli airstrikes that the Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says have surpassed 7,000, This comment from U.S. President Joe Biden.
I have no notion that the Palestinians are telling the truth about how many people are killed. I'm sure innocents have been killed, and it's the price of waging a war.
The statement angered American Arabs, Muslims, and others already protesting Biden's handling of the war in Gaza.
This is shocking and dehumanizing. Would the president feel better if 1,000 Palestinian children had died?
Progressives are also angry. 9 members of Congress, mostly from the progressive wing of Biden's Democratic Party, voted against a resolution backing Israel and condemning Hamas because it did not mourn the loss of Palestinian lives or mention the two-state solution. Various polls show more Americans sympathize with Israelis than with the Palestinians, though younger Americans are more divided.
With American Jews, a very important group in terms of votes and also contributions to the Democratic Party, there's been almost universal praise for President Biden and the way he's handled this.
Republicans in Congress are increasingly skeptical of Biden's commitment to fund foreign wars, including newly elected House Speaker Mike Johnson, who is against sending more money to Ukraine without conditions, but is sympathetic to Israel.
The first bill that I'm going to bring to this floor in just a little while will be in support of our dear friend Israel, and we're overdue in getting that done.
The share of voters who approve of Biden's handling of the issue has increased by 9 percentage points since the days immediately following Hamas' attack on Israel. How the war in Gaza will impact Biden's re-election bid in 2024 will depend on whether the conflict can be contained. In neighboring Lebanon, cross-border attacks have intensified between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah.
If we get involved directly in these forever wars, yes, Biden will suffer. As long as he keeps American troops out of the line of fire, I don't think it will be nearly as controversial, and I don't think it will be a major factor in people's votes.
Sabato added another key factor, whether Palestinian deaths can be minimized and humanitarian aid delivered. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
French President Emmanuel Macron is seeking to promote his proposal to defeat Hamas and other terrorist groups. His suggestion came as he completed a visit to Israel, the West Bank, Jordan, and Egypt. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the details.
During his visit to the Middle East this week, in the wake of the October 7th Hamas attacks that killed 1,400 Israelis, French President Emmanuel Macron made headlines by suggesting that the International Coalition to Defeat the Islamic State group widen its scope to also target Hamas.
Le premier, c'est...
On the basis of this experience, let us build with all the states which are ready to help. Today, Israel, but all the countries in the region, to fight against terrorist groups, including Hamas, to share information, to identify these terrorists and neutralize them.
Macron's office clarified that the proposal was not about sending troops on the ground, but that it rather would involve sharing intelligence and combating the financing of terrorism. The U.S. State Department designated Hamas a terrorist group in 1997. The European Union and other Western countries also consider Hamas to be a terrorist organization. But Hamas has received verbal support from Turkey and Arab countries such as Qatar and is backed by Iran. Bruce Hoffman, an expert in counterterrorism with the Council on Foreign Relations, said he doubts Macron's idea will win much support among Arab countries because of the outrage over Israel's retaliatory attacks on Gaza. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
I think given how messy Gaza is now with the destruction that's been caused, with the displacement of populations, it would be very difficult for many countries to commit to any kind of active role in Gaza's future or in countering Hamas.
Catherine Zimmerman, a counterterrorism expert with the American Enterprise Institute, told VOA that finding any practical solution to stopping Hamas terror would be a huge challenge. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
It's a very difficult needle to thread, and I actually think it might be impossible with Hamas itself, where the group's mission statement it's not to advance the Palestinian cause, but in there is the idea of destroying Israel. And so it would literally mean transforming what Hamas is in order to deal with this terrorism problem.
U.S. President Joe Biden has repeatedly called for another step that Macron has also backed, a revival of the two-state-based Israeli-Palestinian peace process once the Gaza war is over. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. At least 18 people were killed Wednesday night in mass shootings at a restaurant and bowling alley in the northeastern U.S. state of Maine, sparking a massive search for the suspect, who is a trained firearms instructor. Meanwhile, authorities urged residents to lock themselves in their homes. Businesses and schools announced closures on Thursday. Media watchdogs and journalists in Zimbabwe are angry after members of the vice presidential security detail ordered journalists to delete photos and video of second vice president Kembo Mohadi collapsing at a campaign rally on Saturday. As Mohadi was airlifted to an unknown destination for medical attention, the security detail rounded up journalists and ordered them to wipe out recordings of the event. Malawi is seeing a spike in cholera cases, this just 2 months after the government lifted a public health emergency declaration that had been in place since early 2022. And in an emergency session of the terrorist financing targeting center this week, the U.S. called on allies in the Middle East to increase efforts to cut off outside funding for Hamas. Israel's military briefly entered northern Gaza late Wednesday night into Thursday morning. VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem for an update.
The Israeli military says its troops and tanks briefly entered northern Gaza overnight into Thursday, hitting several militant targets as a wider ground incursion loomed after more than 2 weeks of war. What have you heard about this, Linda?
Well, this was a limited ground incursion of tanks, and it was the first ground incursion, but it's not what we've all been kind of waiting for. It was limited. It was just over the border, and then it came back. Israel said it was looking for Hamas infrastructure, and it apparently found some of the openings to the tunnels. Hamas has a whole network of tunnels running underneath northern Gaza. So it was looking for that, and Israeli officials said it was paving the way for the ground invasion, which is still to come.
Speaking of tunnels, I understand that security experts are saying that one of the biggest challenges facing Israel, should they implement a ground war in Gaza, is the Hamas tunnel network, hundreds of kilometers long and up to 80 meters deep, and it has been described by one freed hostage as a spider web. Can you tell us about the Hamas network of tunnels and what role they might be playing and what role they are playing in the conflict?
Yes. So these tunnels were obviously built over many years. Hamas apparently even has like special telephones where people in the tunnels can speak to each other without it being detected by cell phone networks or, you know, Israeli spy equipment. And that's believed to be where most of the Hamas fighters in Gaza are holed up and kind of waiting for the Israeli ground troops to go in. And that could be one reason why Israel is waiting for a large-scale ground invasion, because it's going to be very difficult. Hamas is going to have the advantage once that ground invasion starts. And if, you know, they're in all of these tunnels, they can just pop out at any point and attack the Israeli forces. I did see today that Israel has some new weapons that it's planning. One is called like the sponge, and it's something that can kind of seal off the tunnels. But it's going to be, assuming Israel goes ahead with this, which I'm still not completely convinced. I think it's possible that Israel will decide not on a full-scale ground invasion, but on sort of smaller pinpoint strikes like we saw overnight, as a way of trying to get rid of Hamas without endangering too many Israeli soldiers. But if it does go for a full ground invasion and getting rid of this tunnel network, you're talking about months of hand-to-hand combat in these tunnels.
Israel conducted a military drill close to its border with Lebanon on Thursday. Heavily armed Hezbollah, which is part of an Iranian-backed regional alliance. What about this drill close to the Lebanon border.
Right. Well, this drill was meant to send a message to Hezbollah that Israel is ready for anything. There have been almost daily kind of clashes across the border between Israel and Hezbollah. If you stand on the northern border with Israel, as I've done, you can actually see Hezbollah positions in plain view. I mean, you don't even need binoculars. But at least so, and Israel has clashed with Hezbollah. They've sent over anti-tank weapons. Israel's responded with artillery fire. And Israel says that at least 30 Hezbollah gunmen have been killed since the war began. At the same time, it doesn't seem that Hezbollah really wants a full-scale war with Israel. Hezbollah has at least 150,000 rockets that can reach any part of Israel. And it could be, you know, very difficult for Israel to fight on two fronts, both on Gaza and on Lebanon. Israel says they're prepared to do so, but at least so far, Hezbollah has been sort of, I think, being very careful not to overstep something, for example, by sending a rocket that would kill a bunch of Israeli civilians. The targets that Hezbollah has been firing at have been military. It's been using smaller weapons. Again, that could change, but the sense right now is that Hezbollah does not want a war with Israel.
That's VOA's Rick Pantaleo speaking with Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. The United States has information that the Russian military is executing its own soldiers who do not follow orders related to the war, the White House said on Thursday. John Kirby is White House National Security Council spokesperson.
We believe they have suffered thousands of casualties in their effort to conduct this offensive, some of them on the orders of their own leaders. We have information that the Russian military has been actually executing soldiers who refuse to follow orders. We also have information that Russian commanders are threatening to execute entire units if they seek to retreat from Ukrainian artillery fire.
An August report from the New York Times, citing unnamed U.S. officials, indicated that the number of Ukrainian and Russian troops killed or wounded since the war in Ukraine began in February of 2022 is nearing 500,000 people. Ahead of a scheduled visit to Kenya by Britain's King Charles III and Queen Camilla, the Talai clan of the Kipsigis community is petitioning the king to help them receive compensation for the loss of land during the colonial period. The request comes amid UN criticism of the British government's unresolved colonial-era land disputes. Francis Antonwa reports.
The picturesque highlands of Kericho County in Kenya's Rift Valley. But beneath the scenic rolling hills and sprawling tea estates are dark secrets deeply buried in the very soul of this community. When the British arrived in this part of the world, the Kipsigis community and the people of its Talai clan were evicted from their lands under the Crown Lands Ordinance of 1902, which essentially transferred ownership of their lands to the British.
Before the white man came, we were staying well with no problems with other people. Where my mother came from, we were all friends.
Kibore Cheruyot Ngasura is among the few surviving Talai elders who took part in the colonial resistance of the 1940s, which led to his detention by British colonizers. Today he is 106 years old and lives on the fringes of what was once his ancestral heaven on a piece of land he bought after he was freed. He will live to see Britain's new King Charles III make a state visit to Kenya from October the 31st to November the 3rd. Charles' first to a Commonwealth nation since succeeding his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, last year.
King.
We welcome the king. He is welcome here, but he must remember the Talai people. We have gone through a hard time, and he should do something about it.
Clone.
Tito Arap Mitei is a former colonial-era prison warden.
We want back our property. We want back our property.
Kenya declared its independence from Britain in December of 1963. As Kenya gets ready to commemorate 60 years of independence, these peasant farmers have little cause for celebration, says Joel Kimeto, a leader and a scholar of the Kipsigis.
They should compensate us, and at the same time, they should now acknowledge and tell the Kenya government to revert back our Kipsigis ancestral lands, free of charge. We are not buying. When they came here, they did not buy.
In May 2021, United Nations Special Rapporteurs wrote to the UK government expressing concern about its failure to issue a public apology and provide reparations for the estimated 500,000 Kipsigis and Talai people who suffered under the British rule. The UK government said it issued an apology in 2013 and compensated Kenyans who lived through the emergency period and the Mau Mau insurgency and made claims. The Kipsigis and Talai note their complaint and case is separate. David Ngasura Tuwei is an advocate for the Kipsigis and the author of a book about them.
The objective of writing the book is to highlight the old world. I want the whole world to know the plight of the Talai plus the Kipsigis, what the colonialists did to the Talai and Kipsigis people.
With Buckingham Palace saying in a statement that the king will acknowledge the more painful aspects of Britain and Kenya's shared history during his trip, there is hope that the visit could offer some semblance of historical closure. Francis Ontomwa, VOA News, Kericho, Kenya.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States believes the United Nations has a crucial role to play in addressing the crisis in the Middle East, precipitated by Hamas's appalling terrorist attack against Israel on October 7th. The United States has put forward a resolution that sets out practical steps that we can take together toward that end, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
First, we all recognize the right and indeed the imperative of states to defend themselves against terrorism. That's why we must unequivocally condemn Hamas's barbaric terrorist attack against Israel. Babies riddled with bullets, young people hunted down and gunned down with glee, people, young people beheaded, families burned alive in a final embrace, parents executed in front of their children, children executed in front of their parents, and so many taken hostage in Gaza.
Second, we all agree on the vital need to protect civilians, stated Secretary Blinken.
We know Hamas does not represent the Palestinian people, and Palestinian civilians are not to blame for the carnage committed by Hamas. Palestinian civilians must be protected. That means Hamas must cease using them as human shields. It's hard to think of an act of greater cynicism. It means Israel must take all possible precautions to avoid harm to civilians. It means food, water, medicine, and other essential humanitarian assistance must be able to flow into Gaza and to the people who need them.
It is also critical that this conflict not widen, said Secretary Blinken.
To that end, we call on all member states to send a firm, united message to any state or non-state actor that is considering opening another front in this conflict against Israel, or who may target Israel's partners, including the United States. Don't throw fuel on the fire.
The United States does not seek conflict with Iran, said Secretary Blinken. But if Iran or its proxies attack U.S. personnel anywhere, make no mistake, we will defend our people. We will defend our security swiftly and decisively. And finally, we all agree that we must redouble our collective efforts to build an enduring political solution to the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, said Secretary Blinken. The United States stands ready to work with anyone who's ready to forge a more peaceful and secure future for the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.